Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to another episode of The Daily Friend Wrap. I'm your host, Nicholas Lorimer, today joined by Sargon. Let's get into the first news story of today, and this is one of those stories which illustrates the larger problems in our society and what we need to do to turn around South Africa's many problems. So this is a story based off of reporting from the site GroundUp, which talks about a municipality, Dr. Guma local municipality in the Eastern Cape, where a number of traffic officers have fallen into a dispute with the municipality. The traffic officers say that they have effectively been abandoned by their superiors and left completely sort of without any work to do. This is six traffic officers and five law enforcement officers have initiated a grievance procedure against the municipality. The officers who spoke to the media said they are left to their own devices. There's no daily parade, no work plan, no duties are delegated to them. They have no ticket books and they lack even a card identifying them as officers. They say that their ticketing books were all stolen back in 2022. And since then, they have not issued a single ticket for reckless driving, illegal anything. It's just been, they've just essentially been abandoned, they say, for the last year. The municipality, however, is seeking to initiate disciplinary proceedings against them for what it says are insubordination and bringing the municipality into disrepute. Now, this, I think, captures the essence of so much of what's going wrong across rural South Africa, where you have a system where the senior leadership are almost always politically deployed, politically connected cadres who are essentially protected from bad performance reviews or from ever being fired or changed in any significant way. And when you do have officers who want to do their job, when you do have, and this goes for the police and for the traffic enforcement and pretty much for everyone, when you have people who want to do their job, they are ignored, badly treated, and then if they dare to speak up, they get in trouble. Sarah, what do you make of the story?
Well, I would certainly want to take on their defense in their disciplinary hearings because, first of all, how can they be charged with insubordination? They've had no boss for 2 years or 3 years or however long it has been. And I think that's sort of symptomatic of the tragedy of South Africa is management. I mean, good management, competent management, doesn't have to be excellent management, but competent management makes things happen. And you can't expect the poor subordinates to do the work. I mean, obviously, one gets the impression that these guys, they're not in a position to find the fee books and the traffic fine books and whatever it is they might do. They need to be managed. And somebody is just sitting up there doing God knows what while these poor guys literally sit and do nothing. The department doesn't earn any fine income. It's a microcosm of the awfulness of cadre deployment and the fact that without having people certainly manage who are competent to manage, above all, as long as that's not taken into consideration or cared about, that for me is the ANC.
There's an interesting other political dynamic to this, which is that these officers are all members of SAMWU, the Cosatu Aligned Union, and they say that initially they went to the union to complain about these issues and the union dragged its feet. Now, we don't know why the union dragged its feet or whether, the officers are telling exactly the truth here. But I have a very strong suspicion that it's because the people that the officers were complaining about are important politically. And this is exactly why you shouldn't have unions allied to the government. Because now the unions are forced to sort of say, okay, well, we have to protect our political interests rather than supporting our members. This is exactly why the tripartite alliance is not just bad for business and employers and capital, and all that. It's also bad for workers too, because it creates these weird political incentives that actually mean that unions don't do what they're supposed to do, which is protect their workers.
Yeah. No, that's absolutely correct. I mean, ideally, it would be a natural for them to have gone to the union. It makes a huge amount of sense, and it should result in some action quickly. So that suggests either that the union really doesn't care and it's just taking in membership fees, or as you say, there's a connectivity. I mean, you may even find that the boss, by virtue of the rules of the relevant bargaining council, is a member of the union as well. So it's that the policy that was put in place, the laws that were created to create the one union, one industry, along these political alignments, is a disservice to everybody.
Exactly. And you can see cases like this one here replicated all across local government and law enforcement across the entire country, where similar things, I think, are happening all the time. I know that even big metros have from time to time struggled to issue something as simple as a traffic fine. And, you know, so often we know that instead of that, that traffic fines are simply used as a way to kind of extract bribes from motorists. Anyway, let us move on to our next story. And this is the continuing fallout from the signing of the National Health Insurance Bill by President Cyril Ramaphosa. NHI is expected to essentially replace private medical aids with a government-controlled fund that will then determine what medical care is paid for. So there will still, you know, technically, I guess, be private hospitals and such, but government will be in charge of how all the money gets spent, which I don't think you have to, you know, go super deep into the ideological and research, although we can do that on perhaps on a longer show, to say why this is really not a great idea when we consider how every single other sort of state-owned department has acted when it has large sums of money. Anyway, there's been this panic now that this thing has passed. In fact, this has prompted a number of people to actually go out and issue statements kind of clarifying what the next couple of steps are. So I think Adrian Gore, who is the head of Discovery, one of the, if not the biggest medical aid, one of the biggest medical aids in the country, and he has said that the NHI is not going to affect our clients for many years to come, I think was the phrase that he used in his letter. The Minister of Health, Joe Pachler, says that medical aid users should keep their memberships active until the national health insurance is fully implemented. The expected timeline of implementation is over the next 4 years. They expect it to be complete by 2028. Now, I think that's completely crazy. The thing is, for a number of reasons. One of the things is it's underfunded. In the most recent budget, the government way under-delivered on the budget for its implementation. There's going to be legal challenges, no doubt, one of which the IRR is considering if we can find financial support for that. I know that some of the opposition parties are looking at challenging this thing legally. So there's a lot still to come, but this doesn't mean that NHI is not going to be, I think, already a serious detriment to our healthcare system and our sort of standard of living. Because if you're a younger doctor now, you look at this, you look at how it's going to affect your remuneration and your workload, and you say to yourself, well, maybe NHI will be implemented in 4 years, or maybe it won't. Am I really going to sit around for 4 years and take that risk when I can rather emigrate? Sarah, what do you make of this story?
The risk, NHI practically is not a huge risk at the moment, and as a result of what will be considerable legal action, in fact, it may at the very least be declared unconstitutional and have to be sent back. There isn't the money for it. The fact that the power resides in the minister and his underlings to determine what is done with that money and how it's spent. I mean, you're looking at the estimated cost of establishing the NHI is about 450 to 500 billion rand. Not only do we not have the money, but theoretically, even if we did, can you imagine the temptation to turn that into the biggest source of corruption that we have heretofore, whatever experience. What makes me angry about people like Adrian Gore is not you don't have to worry. You certainly don't have to worry in the short term, but the message, the signing into power that Ramaphosa so rather awfully gleefully enacted is the message. So no one's going to wait. If people feel that this is real now, the detriment is going to be hit us without a single thing being done under the NHI.
Exactly. I mean, just to remind everyone, you know, we've had, for example, the Tembisa Hospital where something like a billion rand, just one hospital, went missing. And some defenders of the NHI have had the gall to claim that somehow NHI will prevent this by centralizing decision-making on some of these spending calls. It's just... Oh, It's obviously a bad idea, and it's many of the questions that we have asked in our submission to Parliament on this issue, and many other groups have asked about how government is going to deal with the problems that NHI is likely to cause, have just not been answered. I mean, I know Dr. Nicholas Crisp is the main architect in many ways of NHI, from the sort of bureaucratic level, has many times just kind of dodged the question of how much political interference may impact the NHI, just kind of almost assuming that it's like somehow not going to be a problem.
Nick, at the risk of just stretching things a bit, I can't say enough the fact that the government, Ramaphosa and Nicholas Crisp, all deride the larger, relative, the slightly larger amount of money being spent by the private sector on medical care. It's our money. We have already paid our taxes for everybody else's medical needs, as one should in a society. The money that's spent afterwards is money people, a lot of people really struggle to have the medical, you know, the medical treatment they need. So the fact that this is cynical, it's almost obscene.
Indeed. Indeed. And just to be clear, this will not help, I don't think, really any more than a handful of people who otherwise would not have been able to get access to things. It is not going to make life better for poor people. So this is not a, at the cost of the rich, the poor will benefit. This is a, everyone is going to suffer from this legislation. Okay, let us move on to our next story. And this is just a little bit of a kind of interesting data point, which shows, I think, some of the contours of our election. The election is very close. It is on the 29th of May. Please remember to go to pledgetovote.co.za and check that out. If you care about how things are going in this country and you are registered to vote, please do go and sign up there so that we can make sure that you have all the info you need about voting when the time comes. So we've had our last by-election that's going to happen prior to the national election. The next by-election will be after the national election. And this is just a little, I think, demonstration of how the new MK party, which has been bouncing all over the polls, the ANC seems to be strengthening towards 50% in the last couple of weeks of the polling. It's still difficult to say whether they're actually going to reach that 50% mark. But, you know, they're kind of sitting somewhere between 45 and 50% in most of the polling data we have available. The MK party is bouncing around all over the place, and it really looks like it is definitely going to be a party confined to KZN with a bit of presence in Mpumalanga and Gauteng, maybe quite a big presence in Mpumalanga. There was a by-election in Ward 1 in Northwest Province on the border between Limpopo and Northwest Province, where the ANC managed to secure 70% of the vote, up actually from 57% in the 2021 local government election. The EFF got about 29%, which is exactly how much they got in the last local government election. And MK, which stood, I think this is the first time we've seen them stand in an election in Northwest, managed 1% of the vote, suggesting that in the EFF's main stomping ground of Northwest Province, that MK is absolutely nowhere. All right, what do you make of this?
I think you're absolutely correct. I think it's very much KwaZulu-Natal and to a lesser extent Mpumalanga and Gauteng for the MK. I also think that it's really shot itself in the foot. I mean, all its internecine fighting just, you know, is basically a lovely sort of stage show for what MK is really about. I don't believe, I may eat my words, but I don't believe MK is a more than a one election, national election party. It would have to really behave like a party after the election to make any ground thereafter. So I think, you know, basically, you know, it's like most things. If you let bad actors say their piece off for long enough, invariably they'll destroy themselves, hopefully.
Yes, I think that's very much the case. Someone pointed out, I think it was my dad made the joke that Jacob Zuma is... refers to himself as a member of two political parties at the moment, MK and the ANC, because he hasn't actually renounced his ANC membership. And he's suspended, according to different people, depends on who you ask, from both political parties at the same time, which I think says something about the kind of politics that he's playing with. I would just recommend to everyone to go and check out the Social Research Foundation's daily tracking poll. It's probably some of the best polling available to the public at the moment. We may see other high quality polling that comes out just before the election, but this tracking poll is quite interesting. If you look at the 60% turnout model, you can see that the ANC has managed to creep up to 46% currently. The DA is sitting on around 24.7, and MK is down to 7.7. Now, they polled as high as 13% relatively recently. So this is, I think, a demonstration that they are not managing to fend off the ANC that well. Anyway, check that out. As you know, we still don't know what the turnout is going to be. We still have lots of questions about the election. So this is not a perfect predictor of what's going to happen on election day, but it gives one a sense of how the race is going at the moment. Anyway, that's all the time we have for today. We hope you found the show interesting. That's a wrap. The Daily Friend Show and The Daily Friend are a project of the Institute of Race Relations, the IRR. The IRR is a think tank which was founded in 1929 to study race relations in South Africa and works to change government policy to improve race relations through non-racialism and to ensure the prosperity of all South Africans. If you like our work and would like to support us, please go to irr.org.za and click Support the IRR, or you can go to thedailyfriend.co.za and click the Fund Us button.